Happen now. Ice lock gets tripped up. Nothing on the play. Now back the opposite way. Foodie at 2-on-1. McCourt, the lone guy back. Foodie fires and it's saved. Back to Foodie with patience. The late guy to Foodie again. Bella on his back to the left side. Nice put it towards the net and Bella makes the save. Oh, baby.
Following is a presentation of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Are you tired of hearing opinions from experts and people who do it for a living?
Shut up and get to the point!
It's the OHL Fanboys Podcast. Weekly recaps, trade rumors, jersey talk, and some special guests. All things you can probably do without.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Too bad it's a podcast. Welcome to the 21st century, and welcome to another episode of OHL Fanboys with Steve McClain and Brian Thompson.
Welcome to the OHL Fanboys Podcast, Season 5, Episode 24. I am Steve McClain, and back once again is returning Brian Thompson. Brian, how are you doing this week?
Much, much better. Everything's a lot better. Everything better on your end?
Things a little up in the air on my end, for the family-wise, but, you know, we're hanging in there, so.
Same.
Yeah, there you go. But, so we appreciate everyone's patience on the odd release times of the last couple of weeks. But
if our families could stop getting sick around the playoffs, we would really appreciate that.
Yeah, no one likes to go to the hospital this time of year.
Dad.
Grandpa. Anyway.
Your grandpa listens?
I don't think so.
Well, fuck him, though.
He's... Hey. I put out an emotional video on Facebook that none of these people listening probably know about. Anyway.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was. I'm sorry. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about in the OHL this week, though. And, Brian went to a game.
That's the main story.
No, it's not. But
screw you, Villa.
Emmanuel. Oh yeah, you want to start there? Jeez.
Yeah, sure.
Emmanuel Villa. He's an overager, and so his final games are going to be this weekend with the Flint Firebirds. But man, he had himself a highlight this past week that you heard here on the top of the show. Of course, Flint rolls into London last weekend. I believe it was on Friday night. And you figure, Flint has been playing a lot better. And, man, they gave London a fight Friday night. They go to overtime, tied at 2, mainly thanks to Emmanuel Vela's heroic performance. What was it, 50? He faced 57 shots in this game and made 54 saves in the end. London did win in overtime, but... You heard that clip. He just, like, and if you've seen it, man, like, I've never seen a goalie so out of place and still, you know, make the save. Like, damn, son. Like, that, to me, is the highlight of the week.
Well, it was, I watched the clip. It was a very good save. I forgot he used to play for London.
He did.
And so, and anytime... There's the three stars, it's always London guys, you know? They could lose line, nothing, and it'd be all London three stars. And so when they gave him the first star, I'm like, does he have cancer? Like, did something really bad happen? He's holding up a stick, and it's like, oh, shit, former knight, I guess that counts in the three stars rule or something.
Yeah. Well, he played for London.
Big performance, though. That was a hell of a performance by him.
And then, I believe, I'm trying to get the actual score sheet up to make sure it was him. Because he followed that up, and, oh no, he didn't play the next night. I was going to say, the next night, Flint beat Windsor, but it wasn't Vela in net. That was Luke Cavillin was in net for that game. But regardless, Flint, you know, I don't want to keep harping on the Flint thing, because we talk about him every week, it seems like. But man, like... I feel something's coming for them next year. Unfortunately for them, they've kind of been screwing themselves by winning down the stretch here. It's not official yet, but they've pretty much played themselves out of last place. They have a 4-point lead over Kingston. And Kingston's only got 3 games left, and they got to play Oshawa twice and Ottawa. So it looks to me that Kingston is going to get that first overall pick this year.
Well, we knew it was going to happen after they went for broke last year, right?
Yeah. Well, if you told
me... I was just amazed Flint came back the way they did. Eric Wellwood should be in consideration for Coach of the Year. I don't even care if he's a midseason hire. He should be in consideration for that award.
Yeah, I don't think he'd win it, but I would definitely, at the very least, nominate the guy. Like, damn. Like, this was a team that, what, they started 0-18? And, yeah, they still have some really horrible losses every now and then. They still get blown out sometimes, but...
They're super young, though.
Exactly. And they still got they got some talent on that team that are coming back next year. And, you know, regardless, even though they're not picking first overall, or at least they likely won't be, they're still going to get, you know, second overall pick. They're probably going to have themselves a good draft. I believe they've stockpiled some picks here, so... You know, I feel something better. So I'm not saying, like, they're going to pull a Sudbury and go from last to, like, division champs next year or battling for a division title. But I think they're going to make the playoffs next year.
So can we talk about races now instead of the bottom
The race for last? Well,
No. Like, real races. Like, we've got 2 division races still.
Yeah.
And we've got 5 days left of hockey.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, in the 5 seasons we've been doing this show now, have you seen a more competitive regular season, or at least one that's come down to the wire like this? Like, we do have a couple of division titles already wrapped up. Ottawa and London have already wrapped up theirs. But going into this final weekend, as of right now, as I'm just trying to look really quick here at the standings, of all the take away Kingston and Flint, of the other 18 teams in the league, there's only 2 that are actually locked in to the seed that they're in. Ottawa is going to finish first in the East, and Guelph is going to finish fourth in the West. Everyone else could move up or down still.
Do you think Saginaw's got it locked up, is basically what I want to ask. Because Saginaw's got to play the very Sioux team that they're trying to hold off, and I'm just trying to load the schedule. They got to play them twice?
Yeah, Saginaw's got the Sioux twice this weekend, a home and home. And I know they have another game. I think it's against London as well. They don't have an easy schedule this weekend.
Yeah, like they have a 5-point lead on the last week of the regular season, and there's a pretty decent chance Saginaw walks out with the 3 seed.
I would say so, but at the same time, personally,
all they need is an overtime win, though.
Yeah, like,
or overtime loss.
We're at the point now. Saginaw just needs 1 point, or the Sioux just needs to lose 1 point. Saginaw winning last night in Sarnia, they won that game in hand that they had, which was pretty big. Saginaw has been on fire. Like, first of all, they beat the Sioux a couple weeks ago, which was kind of that first of their 3 remaining games, and that was a big one. And then this past weekend, on the road on back-to-back nights, they rolled in and won pretty convincingly in both games. They won in Guelph and London. And in London,
I'll say this about Saginaw, too. They have the second-best row ranking in the entire OHL. They got 44. Only Ottawa's got more with 47.
Yeah.
And that's the first tiebreaker now.
It is, yeah. It's not just wins. You got to take away those shootout wins.
So that's the thing. No matter what the Sioux does, if Saginaw can just get one of those games to overtime, they've got their second ever division title.
Not only that, but with their win last night, this is now, like, technically, stats-wise, the best Saginaw team they've ever had. 45 wins is a new franchise high, 95 points. I think their old high on that was 91. Believe it or not, their best season before this, they didn't win the division title. But regardless,
catch London.
They could. They're only 2 points behind London, and they play London. Saginaw has won 9 of their last 10 games. They are the hottest team in the OHL right now. Like,
technically, they could tie Ottawa.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
If they win all their games in regulation, Ottawa lose. I'm just saying, even to say on the last week of the regular season, after all we doing is like, Ottawa can turn off the ship and just coast and everything, Last week of the regular season, and Saginaw, a team that fired their coach midway through the season, can catch Ottawa.
Yeah.
This has been a fun season.
I
wish I went to more games.
And I don't doubt that Saginaw can catch them. It's more so of a, I just can't see Ottawa going 0-3 this weekend. But mind you, Ottawa's the only team with any type of lead. They might decide to rest guys. I think the only thing they have to play for is they don't have that first overall seed clinched up. London is 4 points behind. Saginaw 6 points behind. They both technically catch them. I think Ottawa's going to do it. Like, all they pretty much need is one win, and they'll be fine, I think. But, you know, they might decide to rest guys. Who knows? But, yeah, the Saginaw Spirit have really kind of taken control of that West Division. Sioux, you know, they've been all right still. They're not playing bad, but at the same time, is it to me, like, and I know we could talk about this with teams like London or Erie every year who have been doing good, Owen Sound, who've been having deep playoff runs for several years now, but the Sioux, you know, they've been a very good team for 5 years now. Are we getting to the point, and they're not, like, they've kind of defied expectations this year. Everyone figured this would be kind of, they're going to have a bit of a down year. They've been fantastic, and I've heard a lot of people say that their coach, John Dean, should be in consideration for coach of the year. They did nothing at the deadline, essentially, other than I think they made one small move. This is a team that everyone figured was going to be down, and yet they've put up 41 wins. They're still in contention for that division title, but they're not as deep. Like, is this a team that's finally kind of getting tired? And also now, too, their top player, Morgan Frost, is suspended for the final, you know, weekend of the regular season. He's actually suspended indefinitely right now. We don't know how many games he's going to get, which means he'll probably...
I'm lost on that. What happened?
So I think it was Friday night or Saturday night, they were playing Sarnia, and a lot of people are saying the Sarnia player is mouthing off, but this is, you know, coming from Sioux fans, so I don't know. Long story short, he cross-checked a Sarnia Sting player in the face, like, badly. Like,
I'm of the opinion that you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Now, hear me out. The face is where the mouth is.
Correct.
And when you lunge your stick, because you said cross-checked him, right?
Yeah, like two-handed him in the face.
Okay, so I know this is an audio podcast, but just try and work with me here. So if I've got the stick, and that's a hard object,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thrusting it very fast towards your face, I know you've got the mouth guard and everything, but that can still bruise. Some teeth could be knocked out. It's just not nice.
No, it's not.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And
you shouldn't do it.
And because of that, one Morgan Frost has been suspended indefinitely. And here's the thing. They still haven't, you know, at least as of this recording, they haven't announced how many games he's going to get. The game itself is on March 9th. Now, for this looks like one of those, like, you can't just give the guy the end of the regular season. There's only 3 games left. Like, to me, that is not enough for what I saw. I'm not saying, you know, give him, like, a 20-gamer or anything, but you got to imagine he's going to... And I know people are like, well, playoff games, you know, mean more, and they do. But you got to at least give this guy this weekend and maybe, like, at least the first half of the first round. Like, give him at least 5 games, maybe even, like, 7 or 8 kind of thing. But we'll see what happens there.
You sound very David Branch-esque right there. I don't know, 7 or 8.
Let's spin the wheel of justice.
Branch justice.
Yeah, taste that. Morgan Frost is still the leading scorer in the OHL. And that's another thing that's really close right now. The top 8 players in scoring are separated by 10 points. That's another thing that's really close this year. Morgan Frost is in the lead, but you'd have to imagine if he's not playing this weekend, he might lose that. Jason Roberts, Frost is 108 points. Jason Robertson from Niagara has 106. Justin Brazeau in North Bay, 105. Kevin Hancock, London, 104. I'll just do the 100 guys. Ty Fellhaber from Ottawa, 103. And then you have Arthur Kaliev in Hamilton and Nate Schnarr in Guelph with 100. So, you know.
Who's going to win the goals against record, though?
For goaltenders or for teams?
Yeah. Oh, goalies. You got DiPietro and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen separated by .04.
And you got...
I say we just sit DiPietro for the rest of the regular season and give him the title.
Cedric Andre's right there, too. He's 2.47, and he's played more games than DiPietro.
Oh, shit, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, yeah. So we'll play Cedric Andre, but Ottawa gets blown out.
That's what you want this weekend?
There, fair. Oh, there's a lot I want this weekend.
A lot. I would imagine. Another thing I've talked about with this regular season being competitive, how many years have we been doing this show where you get, you know, even with
five.
Two, yeah, where you get to the final weekend of the regular season, and even like with 2 weeks to go, and like the eight teams in each conference are pretty much set, or maybe you've got like one in one conference.
Last year, I remember the West, we only had London Owen Sound locked in.
Yeah. Okay. So
we got to last year. Now there's hardly any combinations to go through from there. But like 7, 8, and 9 in the West, that's all flexible. 5 and 6 is a little bit flexible in the West. In the East, you've got 6 through 8 kind of flexible. I'm sorry, 5 through 8.
Yeah.
Like North Bay can't catch Mississauga.
No.
But Hamilton, no, wait, they can't either. Brian does math after he just got off a 12-hour shift.
Hamilton can catch Peterborough. North Bay can catch Hamilton. But I was going to say this playoff race in the East was a lot closer before last night. Barrie played in North Bay last night and got their asses kicked 6-2. It was 6-1 after the second period. So that kind of, you know, if Barrie had won last night, that playoff race would be a heck of a lot closer. But now North Bay has a 5-point lead over the Barrie Colts for that final playoff spot. Barrie's lost 3 straight, so Barrie's going to have to come up with a hell of a 3 games this weekend to do it. Still not impossible, obviously, but, you know, hey, if North Bay has a bad weekend and Barrie has a half-decent one, we could see that elusive tiebreaker game.
One of the things, well, fuck, I want to get to that in just a minute.
Yep.
But we always talk about there's never upsets in the OHL playoffs, and that looks like it's a real danger this year, because look at the difference between 4th and 5th in both conferences, almost 20 points.
Yeah. But
so it's nice to play musical chairs, but it's just, where would you like to get your ass kicked?
Kind of. I mean, I would have some faith in Mississauga for doing something. Now, they haven't actually been hot as of late. They were hot. Now they've only won 4 of their last 10. But I don't know. Something about Mississauga, I feel they could give the team that finishes 4th a decent run. But I'm starting to lose a bit more faith in whether or not they could win that series and upset it. I can't imagine Peterborough, Hamilton, or North Bay being able to upset any of those top 3 teams in the East. And over in the West, kind of the same thing. I mean, Kitchener has been playing a lot better as of late, and they're likely going to play Guelph in the first round. And it's one of those, like, I could see Kitchener scaring Guelph a bit, but I would be hard-pressed to see Kitchener win that series. So, yeah, you're probably right. I can't imagine there's going to be any upsets. But to me, we've got a pretty good second round at going forward set up, because especially in the Western Conference, I think, because like those 4 teams in the West. Now, Saginaw, to me, has been almost separating themselves. Maybe they're getting hot at the right time. I don't know. But all 4 of those teams, I think, can beat each other. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like some years where, okay, yeah, we get to the second round, but we're just waiting for the 2 division champions to win, right?
I'm pulling for Saginaw this year, too. Like, I've said it for years on this show. They've never done shit ever.
Yeah.
Ever. They have 1 division championship, and all they got to was to the second round. Like, they just, that they've been there since 2003.
Yeah.
And 16 years, they've had nothing to show for that franchise other than, what, Prout?
Yeah, it's been tough for them. Vincent Trocheck, I guess.
I guess.
They've made it to the second round 3 times, but those three trips to second round happened in a 4-year span, and they have, yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle for them.
And I'm pulling for Sudbury too, man. Like 2 points away from that division, that's a team that just never wins a division.
Yeah, their last division title came in 2001. I think of all teams that have won division titles before, they're the ones that have gone the longest since their last one.
Oh, I was going to say their last division was the Leyden?
Yeah. No, believe it or not, they won the division title back in 2001. But Sudbury, as I quickly bring up the standings again, they're at 41 wins. Something else I wanted to actually talk about was there are four 40 win teams in the Eastern Conference this year. That's the first time that's ever happened.
And for ROW, we call it ROW or Row. I'll just say Row.
Row. Sounds like, yeah.
There's four 40 row win teams too.
In the league, not in the East.
Yeah.
But
yeah, but in the league.
Yeah. Well, and that was something like I know.
Oh, you're just trying to say the East for once is dog shit.
Yes. Even though last year's champion was from the East. But I'm just saying, like, the East is pretty good. Like, it's not just, like, one team. Even though Ottawa has certainly separated themselves from everybody else, they've got more than a 10-point lead. But those teams,
well,
two,
could
three...
make it 40 wins if they went out.
Yeah, they can. They got...
they won't.
Well, they got London tonight, and then a home-and-home with Erie.
Yeah.
So... And...
Oh, shit, so you guys got Erie.
This weekend, yes.
Oh...
Now,
you guys, you can't really catch the Sioux, so there's no reason for you guys to play anybody.
Guelph is locked into fourth. They cannot move up or down. Here's the problem you run into, though, Brian, is Guelph is decimated with injuries. They really don't have room to sit anybody right now. Though I did hear some of the guys might be back this weekend, so maybe they do, but...
Maybe you just don't go forfeit.
I think now's a good time to bring up that race for eighth in the Western Conference, isn't it?
We've had this pact for a while that if there's a game 69, hashtag nice, that you and I are going to go, right?
Yeah.
Are we going to go?
It's going to be tough for me to go because...
It's in Windsor.
I would have to...
Windsor's got the row advantage. That's the first tiebreaker.
Yes, it is. It would be in Windsor. So, yeah, Windsor and Erie, very possible. Hell, even Sarnia is not out of the woods yet.
Well, that's the thing. We got home and home with Sarnia.
Ah.
And I've been getting nothing but shit from idiot Spitfire fans who breathe exclusively through their mouths.
Oh, yeah.
Who were like, oh, you should be cheering them on no matter what. I'm like, I am cheering them on, but I want them to fucking lose.
Yeah, you're looking...
Real Spitz fans want them to miss the playoffs, get a better draft pick, and come out stronger.
Yeah.
What is with the desire to see them get their ass kicked in by London again? It's every other year.
Erie, by the way, for their schedule, in addition to that home-and-home with Guelph this weekend, they are at home tonight against Kitchener.
Ooh.
So
they still have something to play for, kinda. Owen Sound's, they got 4 points on Owen Sound.
Yeah, Kitchener's in a pretty, they're probably gonna finish fifth, but they gotta win at least one game to guarantee that this weekend. So,
and then other people are shit talking me because I'm like, oh, I'm not paying for playoff tickets to see him play London. Oh yeah, you just quit on the team. It's like $30 a ticket, I'm guessing, to watch that. Like, it's not part of my season tickets anymore.
No.
Now, so here's the deal. If there's a game 69, you bet your fucking ass I'm there.
Totally.
If Windsor, though, because we're 1 point behind Sarnia and we have a home and home with them, if they can creep up to seventh, we'll play Sioux or Saginaw. Well, we haven't played Saginaw since 11, and we haven't played the Sioux in the playoffs since 2005. Yeah, I'll go watch a fresh matchup. No problem. Because we got a puncher's chance against the Sioux. Saginaw, we play them 8 times. You never know with a team who plays another team that much.
I would imagine Saginaw beats you guys, but you might steal
one.
Oh,
I'm not. But that's the thing. I'm not expecting them to win. I just don't want to see them get swept.
Fair.
So,
And you
that's my deal.
Yeah.
If Windsor plays game 69, I'll go to that. If they play the, if they get the 7 seed, I'll go to the playoffs. But if it's London Windsor, $30 to watch a prison rape, no.
Now, what happens if Windsor gets that 8th and Saginaw gets first? Because as we discussed, Saginaw has a legitimate shot at that.
Then I'll go. I just don't want to see Windsor-London until the second round.
Yeah.
Which is not going to happen.
You've seen enough Windsor-London lately.
And it's my favorite series of all sports. That's our Michigan-Ohio State.
Yeah.
But it's just been so... fucking one-sided.
You want to see?
Why do I have to pay to watch it?
You want
to
see a Windsor-London that's competitive. You want to see that 2009 series again. Yeah.
No, even 2017 when we blew the 3-1 lead.
Yeah
I remember. Sure, give me competitive, but I'm not paying for that. And also, holy shit, I can't remember a year ever where there's been so little season ticket information since late into the year.
Yeah, not...
I've heard shit off the spits.
I know...
Have you gotten anything from Guelph?
Yeah, we finally got ours, but, most years, we get ours in, the middle of January. This year, it didn't come until, the end of February. Which...
What the hell's going on?
I know ticket prices are going...
This is a lot of teams, though.
It's going... And our ticket prices have gone slightly up. I know after taxes, my tickets now cost $635.
Christ.
Yeah, it's getting up there. But
I'm fucked, too, because I actually owe on my income taxes this year. Usually my income taxes pay for my season tickets.
Oof.
Life lesson for you kids, if you work a shitload of overtime, make sure they take off more taxes. The more you know.
Do-do-do. Couple of things to mention, too. That whole, and I don't want to keep dwelling on the Kingston Flint thing, but now they actually know what they're playing for, because Shane Wright officially got the exceptional status this past week.
Oh, did he?
Yes. It was kind
of... Has anyone failed the exceptional status test thing?
Funny you should mention that. Maybe not in the OHL, but somebody this week was going for it in the queue and did not get it. I can't remember his name right now.
How'd he fail?
I don't know. He was.
I'm kind of excited about a 15-year-old freaking failing.
I know.
Who's... No, but I'm just genuinely curious.
I don't know. He applied, and Hockey Canada said no, but they gave it to Shane Wright on the same day.
Hockey Canada said no, not the CHL.
It's not the CHL that gets to decide this, or they might have a say, but at the end of the day, it's Hockey Canada that decides if they really get it or not.
Weird.
Yeah. So, I'm sure they get input from the CHL, but regardless, Shane Wright, who has been the guy everyone's been talking about all season, but it was kind of he still hasn't gotten exceptional status yet, people. Well, he finally has it now, just under a month away from the draft, so that's what they're playing for. So.
Is he going to be in that OHL Cup thing?
Yeah, he's plays for the Don Mills Flyers. I think he has 150 points this year or something crazy like that for them. And they only...
Slouch.
They only play half the games an OHL team does. So, yeah, he's pretty decent. So, have fun in Kingston, I guess.
Come on. No, come on. I want him to go to Flint. I want Eric Wellwood to get that raw potential.
Well... And I was actually
went out this week.
I was having a conversation with someone, and I said that he probably is better off hockey wise in Flint. Now he'll probably get more minutes in Kingston, but in the long run, I think Flint would be better for him. He's got Eric, like you just mentioned, Eric Wellwood would be his coach, and I think that would be a good combination. But B, I think Flint has a bit more of a supporting cast right now than the Kingston Frontenacs do. And he gets protected a little bit more. He doesn't have to go in and play on the first line right away for the Flint Firebirds, you know what I mean? Because they still will have Ty Dellandrea and Jake Durham, who can score a lot of goals. He doesn't have to get thrown right to the Wolves as a 15-year-old. And I'm sure he'll be very good in this league, but at the same time, it's you don't want to just put him out, a 15-year-old as your first-line center every night, you know what I'm talking about?
And it's a big deal too to be the exceptional status, because anytime you're the exceptional status guy, they rattle off the names of all the exceptional status guys until Sean Day Billy Gunn the title.
This is he 1999 King of the Ring did, didn't he?
Yeah, every time he's gonna be on TV or whatever, it's like, oh, John Tavares and Jason Spezza,
Connor McDavid.
And it's just like, shit. When I was 15, I had my first job. No.
Yeah, I didn't.
That's just a lot for a kid.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying. Yeah, and
plus, privileged millennial.
I'm just saying, I think in Flint, he would be a bit more sheltered, if that makes any sense. But
oh, beautifully sheltered. Work for McDavid.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And
instead of, you know, Don Cherry's hometown.
Yeah,
Christ.
But unless Kingston can rattle off a couple of unlikely wins this weekend, I just don't see it happening. He's going to end up as a Kingston Frontenac. So, hey, congrats, Kingston. You're getting yourselves an exceptional status player.
We'll see.
We'll see. A couple other things I wanted to talk about worth noting. The Rouyn Noranda Huskies. I know this is a Q thing, but still, the CHL deal. They won 25 straight games. They were going for the all-time CHL record of 26. They were tied at 25 with Kitchener and the a team that doesn't exist anymore, Sorel, from like the 80s or something. So we had a three-way tie at 25 wins, and the Huskies lost game 26 down in Drummondville. So we now have a three-way tie at 25 wins apiece for the CHL record. Now, some people, of course, and I found it was mostly people in Kitchener, started yelling before that game 26. They're like, well, it doesn't count because, you know, they had Rouyn Noranda had one shootout win in this, so it doesn't count. I'm like, damn.
Oh, fuck off.
You won 25 straight games and only needed one shootout? Screw you. Like, but, you know, it's one of those, like, a team who has the
Kitchener fans, don't be Oshawa fans.
Yeah, it's one of those we're trying to hold on to the record kind of thing, and it's just like they can't accept that they're going to lose this record that I'm sure most of them didn't even know. Some people didn't even know that they had it until this week, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was like a record, I think Kitchener set it in like 83, 84 or something like that or whatever, but regardless, you know, I think a congrats goes to Rouyn Noranda for winning 25 straight games before losing, but they seem to have the queue firmly in place, so we'll see.
Is this not the best week of the year, Steve? March break.
Well,
you get the last week of the regular season, all the NCAA basketball conference championships are going on, weather's starting to get a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
Let's just appreciate where we are right now, Steve.
Oh.
This is a nice time to be alive.
It's getting, you know, I could do with a bit warmer. It's still pretty cold, but yeah, things are getting better. It's spring. The days are quote unquote longer now. With the time change now, it's still light at like 7:30. That kind of threw me last night. Like the sun was still up and there were games already halfway through the first period. It was like, whoa.
Yeah. We're reaching, tailgating possibilities once again.
Hell yeah. And also too, you know, we might have something set up down in Halifax this year. So that's a little tidbit I'll throw out there. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
Get to the guest.
No, I got one more thing to talk about, but it is...
Oh, my God.
It's an Oshawa...
Between your hour-long interview with Keith last week, and now you're just keeping this going. What do you want?
I thought it was worth mentioning...
That people have things to do. They're on soul cycles right now, and you're boring them. What is it?
I thought it was worth mentioning, and it kind of segues into Oshawa here. Last Friday was the international, like, Women's Day or whatever.
Steve, the champion of the Me Too movement. Women's Day or whatever.
Well, I'm trying, because I don't know the official name. Like, I don't mean, I'm not, like, blowing it off, like,
Women's Day, but here's, I guess it was some chick's day. I don't know.
Wow, wait.
When's International Men's Day? Like, come on, Steve.
Okay, I don't have the official name in front of me.
That's why you don't get MCing gigs.
Fair enough. I wanted to say, because it was Women's Day, we had an all-female OHL broadcast last Friday between the Oshawa Generals and the North Bay Battalion in Oshawa.
Are you shitting me?
No.
That's awesome! Who didn't play my play?
As I'm, you know, it would have been good if I brought up that to begin with. But as I'm bringing it up now, because there's certainly...
It's so important that you had to say this, and then you have no information
on
it.
awesome,
Steve.
I know. It was pretty bad. The play-by-play was Hannah Nordman. Color analyst was Laura Barney, as well as Samantha...
I've heard of her.
Sorry?
I've heard of her.
Yes. There's at least one other you'll have heard of. Also on color, because they did a three-woman booth. So also on color was Samantha McDade. Your host was Michelle, and I'm sorry if I get this name wrong, Michelle Faruga. And our location reporter was Allie Monroe.
That's awesome!
And I did not see the broadcast, but I did talk to Laura Barney afterwards. She said it was fantastic. It was one of the, like, just everything went great with it. Like, kudos. Very, very much so. Like, I thought it was a really cool thing that they did. You know, kudos to Rogers for doing that. Just, it was awesome.
Well, it's too easy to do a sideline reporter's gig. You can't tell me, we've had a bunch of women on this show as featured guests. You can't tell me half of them wouldn't easily cut it as a color commentator, even a play-by-play person.
Exactly.
I would love to see them get more chances. And even when I watch intermission shows, it's a frickin' sausage fest. And it's just the same old dudes rehashing the same old crap. And it's just like, give these ladies a chance. Half of them are really, really good. And even the ones that aren't, well, guess what? It's community television. They got to get their chops in somehow.
Exactly.
A lot of people suck when they start.
And that's why, like, because in the past, all you've ever seen from women is at best they're either like the sideline reporter in the OHL or they're the host, right? I'm very hard pressed to remember any one of them in the actual booth before. So other than like for
I can think of
a game or two, you know what I mean? So
no, I can't even think of that.
Yeah. So the fact that this happened, like, it's awesome, and hopefully we get to see it again. So good on you know, Rogers and Oshawa for getting that together. So yeah, that's what I wanted.
Get on it, Coach. Go get more ladies.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to bore everyone with, Brian.
You know, that was a good one. I'll give you that.
There you go. So now it's time to get to our guests this week. And we're going to stay in Oshawa because we're sticking with the Oshawa radio broadcast this time. Our guest this week is the play-by-play announcer for the Oshawa Generals on OshawaGenerals.com, Mr. Callum Ng, when we come back on the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Ragula, he likes to get up on the play as well, has the puck, now lost it, centering pass, they score! And a miscue deep in London territory, and all of a sudden the Spirit are up 1-0. Well, the center ice area for Petty and across the line, poke check by Bouchard, Tippett though, he'll waltz his way out, look out! Here's a chance for Tippett, and Perfetti scores in front of the net after he got by Bouchard, and now the Saginaw Spirit lead by 2. Out through to center ice and across the line, here goes McLeod, look out, chance scores! There's the natural hat trick, I think, for Perfetti. Fox shooting it, and it's rattled off.
Well, I believe Perfetti just recorded his fourth goal of the game as he shoots this the length of the ice, and indeed that is Perfetti on the spin around.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast. Our guest this week is the play-by-play announcer for the Oshawa Generals on OshawaGenerals.com. It's Callum Ng. Callum, thank you so much for taking some time out and joining the show this week.
Yeah, no problem, Steve.
Of course, the Oshawa Generals is one of the few teams without actual radio, but you guys get some pretty decent numbers on the webcasts and the web streams. We'll get into that and how all that works out for the Gens broadcast. But first, I want to talk about yourself. Of course, you've been calling Gens games for four seasons now, four and a bit seasons, really. How did all this come about with you? Was this always kind of the career path you wanted to take? And how was it that you got from where you are to being the Oshawa Generals announcer?
Yeah, it's funny because I kind of always did want to be a broadcaster or journalist. I was always really interested in radio, even from when I was a kid. I remember, you know, grabbing my mom's Sony Walkman and sneaking it into my room and listening to, I grew up in Calgary, so I'd listen to Flames games well into the night. So I would always be listening to the radio. And so I think from childhood, that was always something that interested me. And then, you know, took the university path, did quite well in high school. So got guided toward university. I went to UBC, did a couple of degrees there and went in a more marketing direction. And I don't know where I lost the broadcasting or journalism track, but ended up opening a sports marketing business for a little while and then just kind of got drawn back to it. And then a few years into being a working adult, decided, I think maybe I'll just go and do some broadcasting courses and really, really loved it. And I guess the rest is history. From there, I really made the pivot.
Was hockey kind of, you mentioned, you know, you listened to Flames games growing up. So I'd imagine hockey was the first love and as far as what you wanted to broadcast in. But they always kind of say, you know, if you want to be a broadcaster, sometimes you can't really be picky and choosy. You got to take the jobs as they come, and you might end up calling a sport that maybe you're not a big fan of. Did you, you know, before you got to the Oshawa Generals, did you have to call any other sports, or was it kind of hockey right off the bat?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I went to school in Vancouver, and I was living there post-graduation, and I actually went to BCIT, which was a great program for broadcast arts and radio and journalism and all that. And I did a part-time program there while I was working full-time, so I would do it in the evenings. And then, you know, as you get into it, you realize that, you know, the one thing that you have to do is get better at it. So you pick up any and every gig that you can find. So I started looking around, and because I was connected to UBC, the campus radio station, CITR, had a bunch of opportunities to call campus sports. Volleyball is the first thing that I did. So I remember doing a varsity volleyball game where it was calling the game, the volleyball game, but then they didn't tell me until, you know, a minute before that I was hosting the show that was in between sets. So it was probably 15 to 20 minutes of me having had no preparation, not knowing that I was doing it, and having to host this entire 15-minute program. So that was a scramble and terrifying for a broadcaster. You know, it was probably my second time on air. And so, you know, you learn things from being thrown into situations like that very early on where, you know, if you're going to get an opportunity to do something on air, you know, you got to be extremely well prepared. And then in addition to that, it definitely helps to be in that situation in the first place. So find a number of outlets that you can lend your voice to and call anything. Years doing this, even while I was still in school, I called karate, I called figure skating, I did some play-by-play of volleyball and basketball. And then eventually I got on as the full-time hockey announcer for the UBC U sports teams, the hockey teams. So I did that for a full season. And that's where I really caught on to hockey and realized that I loved it and wanted to continue doing that. But even while doing that, I hosted a music show on a Vancouver radio station. I did a number of other things just to be on air. And you have to be pretty hungry in the early stages to just get reps, to get out, to be on air, to learn on the job, to make mistakes and continue to develop that way.
So how do you get from the West Coast, you know, calling UBC, and get here to Southern Ontario and eventually the Ontario Hockey League?
Yeah, so I think in that spirit of doing everything and anything to get into journalism and broadcasting and not being necessarily too picky about what it is I wanted to do, I think it kind of materialized over the last 3 or 4 years that play-by-play and particularly hockey was what I really loved and would love an opportunity to continue doing it throughout my life. But at the beginning, it was all right, I would love to be a journalist and or a broadcaster. So how do I do that? Well, in the spirit of taking on any and every opportunity, it was, how do I develop my skill set? So in the first couple of years, while I was going to BCIT and then the 6 to 8 months afterwards, I kind of looked around and I figured, all right, well, social media is growing. Writing skills are obviously very important. So I tried to develop those two things. So could I shoot and produce and edit video? That was one of the things that I worked on in the first year. And could I write really well? So where could I write? What events could I cover? So I covered the AHL playoffs for a hockey website. I covered swimming because I have a swimming background, actually, for a swimming website. So I cover international swimming and the Olympics and stuff like that. So I kind of collected all of these opportunities or all of these skill sets together. And then about a year after starting at BCIT, or the summer after starting at BCIT, there was an opportunity with the Canadian Olympic Committee to be a digital content producer for them and writer and here in Toronto. So I saw that it's the type of role where, you know, you read the job description and you get to the edge of your seat because you're like, I can do all of these things. Like, I can shoot and edit video, I can create social content, I can write. Like, this job is perfect, right? So I applied, and fortunately I knew one or two people at the CFC who told me a little bit about the role, and so I applied for this job from Vancouver in Toronto. And I figured if I wanted to be, you know, someone who was doing work in media, then Toronto was the place where I needed to be because there were more jobs there, there were more sports teams, just a bigger market, more opportunities. So I figured that I had to come here, and so this would be a good place to start. So I kind of applied as a long shot. I got an interview, flew out in the summer of 2013. You know, I did the interview, and I actually went through the whole process. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Steve, where you do an interview and you're like, I did not get that job. I definitely didn't get that job, right? Where you finish it and you realize that I'm going home. I did get that job. It's okay. I guess I'll keep working in Vancouver. And so I was walking down Yonge Street. I remember it was a ridiculously hot day, and I'm a Western kid. So I grew up in Alberta and I lived in Vancouver. So I wasn't used to the humidity, and I was wearing a suit, and it was 35 degrees, middle of June, and I'm just soaking wet. And I was like, you know what? That was a lot of stress, and I kind of feel bad, and it's too bad. And so I went into Tironi, which is a restaurant on Yonge Street. It's a good Italian restaurant that I've become familiar with now, but I didn't know what it was. And I stopped in and I was like, I'll just grab a drink or coffee or something like that. And then I got a phone call from the people who had interviewed me, and they said, hey, Callum, we're just wondering if you could come on back and meet the CMO and the CEO because, you know, they'd love to meet you as part of the hiring process. So I thought, wow, maybe I do have a shot here. So I dried myself off and I walked back up to the CFC offices, which at the time were at St. Clair and Yonge, if you're familiar with Toronto, and met with the CMO and CEO, and long story short, I got the job. And so that got me here to Toronto. And I loved that job. I spent 2.5 years there really developing my digital content abilities and writing, and I went to the Olympics in 2014 and covered that. So that was, it was an unbelievable opportunity. But when I got back from Sochi in 2014, I was really itching to get back on air. And I hadn't really planned, you know, how I would do that. But the first thing, I don't know why I thought about doing this, but I went on the OHL website and went to their broadcasting page and looked at the list of broadcasts and teams in the area and, like, what their broadcast situation was. I don't know why I thought to do that, but I thought, you know, I did play-by-play hockey while I was in Vancouver. I loved it. And so maybe that's a place to start. Maybe they need an intermission host or something like that. And so I literally, because I wasn't super familiar with Toronto, I wasn't super familiar with how far away is, you know, at the time, Belleville, how far away is Oshawa. You know, I didn't know. And I think I honestly just started going down the list geographically to, like, where could I reasonably go? I obviously can't work for North Bay's broadcast, but, you know, maybe I could work for the Steelheads or something like that. And I just went down and I just started calling people. And lo and behold, I called Oshawa's guy, which at the time the rights were held by a small media group. And this guy named Pete Whitaker. I spoke to him on the phone, and I said, hey, you know, I have some play-by-play experience and this and that. And he said, actually, we're looking for a color guy. You know, can you start this weekend? And I said, sure, sure. So I started, you know, very shortly after that. They had a play-by-play guy. This was 2014, fall of 2014. And so I did it for a couple of weekends, couple of games, and then I got a call on a Monday morning, and it was Pete, and it was like 8 a.m. And he said, "He's, you know, Cal, can I chat with you for a couple minutes? Do you have some time?" And I even before picking up the call, I thought, "I'm getting fired for sure." Like they listened to the first couple of broadcasts, and they're like, "We got to get rid of this guy." So I'm like, "Oh, you're getting fired. You know, good effort. That was great. It's too bad." So anyway, he says, "Listen, we've had a change of plans with our play-by-play guy. He's moving on. So can you fill in for him and potentially take over?" So I was kind of taken aback. I was like, wow, I mean, I don't know. I had a full-time job at the COC. Obviously, there's a lot of travel, as you know, 68 games, 34 away from your building. And even getting to Oshawa from where I live, where I'm based in Toronto, is an hour and a half sometimes through traffic. So I considered it, but I think I had to consider it for probably about 15 minutes before I called him back and said, I will absolutely do it. I'll figure out a way to do it. And that was the fall of 2014. And amazingly enough, as you know, the Generals were incredible that year. And I was very fortunate to be a part of the group that went on to the Memorial Cup and then it would eventually win it in overtime in 2015. Which was just unbelievable because, I mean, every broadcaster in the league, and I didn't understand it then. I feel like I was a rookie on an NHL team that went to the Stanley Cup. I didn't get it then, but every broadcaster was like, dude, this is unbelievable. Like, this might never happen to you again in your life.
Yeah.
So I was really fortunate to be a part of that. And long story short or long story long, that's how I kind of went from Vancouver to ending up in the OHL.
Yeah, there are several play-by-play guys around the league who've been in this league for decades and never gotten a chance to even see an OHL championship, and there you are, not even a full season, and you get to call not just a Memorial Cup, but you know your team, of course, winning the Memorial Cup in overtime. I mean, I'd imagine as a play-by-play announcer, you know, every kid dreams of scoring the overtime winning goal to win the Stanley Cup, or in this case, Memorial Cup. I'd imagine that's the play-by-play announcer's dream too, is getting to call that overtime championship goal.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, Steve, like it was so early in my OHL career that I don't think I appreciated that. You know, I do now in my fourth full season, I understand what it's like to be a part of a team that is not so great and a team that is, you know, threatening and competitive. I don't think I would have appreciated it, you know, in the moment. And I mean, how could I? It was my first season and, you know, I was just there and I was like, oh, this is fun. You know, here I am at the Memorial Cup and up in the broadcast booth in Quebec City and doing this thing. And I certainly appreciate, you know, having had done play-by-play before, I certainly appreciated how much work went into it and how fun those moments were. But I don't think that I necessarily appreciated the dream of calling, you know, an overtime winner. That being said, I certainly did understand the seriousness of it. And I had an idea of what I was going to say and how the call was going to unfold. It was a great goal, which was fortunate. It was Anthony Cirelli, of course, on the doorstep, who has gone on to, you know, have a fledgling NHL career, which is fantastic. And we saw that early on for him in Oshawa. That's a different story, but yeah, I don't think I fully appreciated the way that I would now. But that being said, I mean, I wouldn't trade that experience for the world. And it was really cool that it happened so early in my career.
And not only that, you got to be on the call for the final game ever at Le Colisée, which, you know, as we all know, is a very historic building.
Yeah, I mean, that was really cool. Like, walking through that building and there are some places that you go, even in the Ontario Hockey League, and you can feel the history in the wall.
Yeah.
And then you can even see how it manifests, right? I mean, there was my, so my broadcast booth, the broadcast booth for, I mean, there were a bunch, of course, right? Because there's the broadcast booth for the Kelowna Rockets, and there was essentially a broadcast booth for each team that was at the tournament, plus TV and all that. But there are stickers for all the rights holders for Nordique's broadcast throughout the years, you know, on, for instance, above my broadcast booth. And these are things that, I mean, these things should be in a museum, right? So they had a sticker for each of the radio stations over the years that have covered the team. And there's just, you know, stuck above the radio, the entrance to the radio booth. And, I mean, that building is so historic. And, you know, it's a shame that we have to move on and we have to modernize, of course, and create amenities and better buildings. But at the same time, it's really hard to let go of some of those memories in that building. And you can hear it, you know, in a building like that, you can hear the championships and the crowds echoing in the walls. It was a beautiful thing to be a part of, for sure.
The Oshawa Generals, since then, have not really, you know, obviously the playoff success hasn't been there. You know, of course, the year after they went out in the first round, you get those rebuilds after a championship like that. But at the same time, the Generals have never really bottomed out. I mean, you take a look at right now the four teams that were at the Memorial Cup last year in Regina. I think two of them are the two worst teams in the CHL by record this year. Regina is also, I think, also going to be missing the playoffs. And I think the best one is Hamilton, who will make the playoffs in the OHL, but obviously is not expected to go far. Oshawa's had some pretty decent regular seasons since then. You know, they had a 40-win season a couple of years back and kind of took a bit of a step back last year when it was potential that they were going to be the Memorial Cup hosts and then lost out to Regina. But things have been kind of building, and it's never been this team was bottoming out. It seemed like they're always building towards something, and that something appears to be this season, but they're in a bit of a dogfight in this Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think the idea, Steve, and I mean, you've covered the OHL for a while, and you see the ups and downs, but I think the focus in Oshawa is always to field a competitive team or be as competitive as possible. And understanding that there are ups and downs, there is a cycle in the Ontario Hockey League where you are going to end up, by virtue of the age of your players, the maturity and their service time, better than other teams. But the idea in Oshawa has always been, I think, to, especially in the Rocco Tullio era of ownership, to continue to be competitive year in and year out and not necessarily have those really down years. So even the season after the Oshawa Generals won the Memorial Cup, they had a really young group. But Bob Jones was hired as the head coach to replace DJ Smith, who went off to the Leafs. And coaching was a big part of that group. And that year they made the playoffs. They lost to Kingston pretty handily. But they still made it. They still won a game in that series. And they still, you know, built for the following season where they won a series, right? And it was on track to be better last year. Unfortunately, Bob Jones had some health problems, so he wasn't on the bench for that year, which I think, of course, really impacted the team. If you don't have your head coach for any of the games, you know, it's going to have an impact. So, you know, they probably would have progressed last year, and then this season would have been the ideal season for them, which they then, and we can talk about this, they made a whole bunch of personnel changes that I think actually made them better going into the playoffs. But yeah, the idea is not to take a dip. The idea is continue to field something that's entertaining to watch, that is competitive. And look, you can do it. I mean, there are teams that are perennial threats. I mean, the London Knights, everybody talks about them, but you know, I think Kitchener goes on and they do some pretty good work there. Windsor does the same thing. There are teams in the Western Conference that they understand that they want to be competitive year in and year out and not necessarily see those dips.
So let's talk about that trade deadline this year. Oshawa was pretty active at the deadline this year. And the first kind of move they made, well, actually, I believe the first move they made was kind of a little bit before the deadline. They brought in Anthony Salanitri from the Sarnia Sting. And everyone figures, okay, there's kind of that first domino to fall. You know, Oshawa's going to be a go-for-it team this year. And then they kind of swerved everybody for a second there, and they traded Jack Studnicka and Matt Brassard to the Niagara Ice Dogs. And everyone thought, well, now Oshawa's selling. They just traded their captain. They just traded a couple of really solid pieces on their team, but then went right back to the buying mode and, you know, brought in Brett Newman from Kingston, brought in a couple of OHL champions from last year from the Hamilton Bulldogs and Brandon Sajan and Nicholas Mattinen. they definitely made the team better. And from what I've heard, you know, those two guys down in Niagara, it's been an experiment, and you know, one of those players, man, maybe it's not maybe the drive is there, so to speak. And a lot of people in Oshawa has said that that move, even though it was more of a selling move, was maybe one of the most important deals they made.
Well, I'll tell you, it was an interesting time in early January in Oshawa, because this was the year, I mean, we've been talking about this year since probably two seasons ago, you know, since that first Bob Jones season of being 2019, this is the year. So whether they get the Mem Cup or not, you know, or whatever ends up happening at the end of the day, they think they'll be better in 2019. Okay, so that's great. So we're building toward it, and then all of a sudden it's late fall, and I'm talking to Roger Onash, who's GM, and I'm asking him, all right, so how do you feel about the group? And, you know, they're not seeing, they were losing some games they probably shouldn't lose, and it's hard not to make the comparison to the 2014-15 team, right, that was just dominating everybody by Christmas, and you just knew they were going for it. So by Christmas, I'm asking the question, well, what's happened here? Then the rumors started coming out, right, all over Twitter. We're hearing Jack Studnicka, Matt Brassard to Niagara. And fans are starting to DM me and at me on Twitter about, like, what's going on. This does not seem like the 2019 season that they're going to go for it and all of that. Like, what's happening? And I'm thinking myself, yeah, what is happening? Because this is your captain and one of your top, at least your top four defensemen. That's not a move that a team going for it makes, right? A team adds, like you said, Anthony Salinitri, and then you start adding overage pieces if you can. But then it starts to really transpire. So I believe the Generals made 8 transactions over 5 days.
Wow.
From the 5th to the 9th. So I believe that's 5 days from the 5th to the 9th. And that was unbelievably fun to be a part of, I'll tell you first and foremost. Just seeing the trades come out, getting an idea of, as the picture began to materialize, of what the Generals were actually doing. And I think that they surprised and shock the Ontario Hockey League by going that direction, because everybody thought they were selling. Okay, maybe we can't beat Ottawa. Maybe we can't. First of all, you're going to trade your captain and a top four D-man to Niagara, a team that you may have to compete against in the playoffs. And then they flip the switch or flip the script or whatever the saying is. And then, you know, add all of these great overage pieces. And when I talked to Roger after the dust had settled, I believe we talked on January 10th, which was trade deadline day. He was tired, first of all. He did a lot of work. And we chatted about, you know, what had transpired. And he said, listen, I think we're better now because we didn't sacrifice any age. So Nick Wong went to Kingston. And so that was one younger player who went, but they picked up Leighton Moore, who's debuted for the Generals, young defenseman. He's fantastic. He's 17 now, but so they sort of replaced that youth. And he said, I think we're down one second round pick from what we had prior. So they're literally down one second rounder. They didn't lose any youth, and he thinks that they're better. And I would tend to agree with him. And I think that the no regulation losses in February would bear that out. And so, yeah, I mean, look, it remains to be seen what happens in the playoffs, but I think one of the most wily sets of decisions by any general manager, at least since I've been covering this league, which I know hasn't been the longest time, has been what Roger Hunt and the Generals Hockey Ops group did in early January. And listen, I obviously work for the team. I know that probably sounds a touch leaning in their direction, but I mean, you have to be honest and objective and look at it. I mean, it's probably one of the most interesting sets of decisions that, at the very least, any general manager has made in the last handful of years in the OHL.
It definitely some shrewd moves from him, as you mentioned, and I was going to bring up his too. Leighton Moore was a really big name. I remember a lot of Ice Dogs fans thinking, man, we really didn't want to have to give up him to get these guys, but I guess that's what it costs. And, you know, now, you guys lose Nick Wong for the future, but you got that Leighton Moore in there. And of course, a lot of other good young pieces in Oshawa as well. But, you know, you can't talk about the Oshawa Generals And you, actually, I was going to mention, too, you know, you mentioned how the team has been better. The stats back that up. They've certainly won a lot more in the second half than they have in the first half. But you can't talk about the Oshawa Generals and top players on this team without talking about your goaltender, Kyle Kaiser. Like, just an incredible season he's having, some great numbers. You know, top goaltender in this league, an elite goalie. You know, kind of a dumb, simple question, but how big has he been to the Generals and their success this year and for the playoffs going forward, even though he has a bit more of that stronger backup now with Aiden Hughes behind him?
He's been their MVP by far, right? And there's no question that in the first half of the season, that's the case. And in the second half of the season, that's the case. You know, from covering this league, that goaltending in the game of hockey takes time to develop. Right. I mean, there's a reason why there are very few netminders who debut in the National Hockey League before the age of 20, because you just need to get better, and it's a skill set that needs longer to develop. So it's very important to have a good goaltender in the Ontario Hockey League. And, you know, if you're going to win, you're going to need to have it. And Kyle Kaiser has been instrumental for the Oshawa Generals, really carrying them through that first half of the season, which was pretty shaky at certain points for the Generals. And I think that's what gave rise to some of those trades. But, you know, they were nice, and KK38 was the guy who carried them through and gave them the win, and you need that from your netminder, and he's been integral. You know, I always wish, you know, we see stats and we see save totals, and then we're starting to see some statistics about red zone or, say, scoring chance areas, and your statistics in those areas, or, you know, how many times you get beat high glove or low block or whatever. I would love to see timeliness of saves and statistics around that, and measuring a netminder, for instance. And, I mean, I don't know if it would be helpful from a performance perspective, but my point is, for Kyle Kaiser, the timeliness of the big saves for him, whether it's in one-goal games or when the Generals are down by a tally and they've got to come back, or whether it's when the other teams pull the net, their netminder and they've got an extra skater on the ice, he's making those big saves when they need to be made. So I would love to see some sort of metric about that, because that's where he really shines. He's a competitor. He's literally physically attacking the puck when he's playing his best. He very rarely allows an easy angle on a shot. And he's one of those netminders similar to Michael DiPietro or Ukko Pekka Luukkonen in Sudbury, where he's going to allow a goal where you think, oh, that was definitely stoppable. He's only getting beaten if you have a very good scoring chance. And so he's been very important. And he's a fun goaltender to watch, too. He's fairly athletic. He's not the biggest shot blocker type guy, although he's pretty good positionally. You know, he does get himself in a pickle once in a while, you know, where he has to make a super athletic save. But I mean, that's a fun part of being a netminder, is having to make those stops sometimes. And he will be integral into the playoffs for sure. There's been a lot of talk about the Generals, you know, in adding Brandon Sajan from Hamilton and Nicholas Mattin as well, guys who've won championships. And adding Anthony Salinitri and Brett Newman. So there's a lot to talk about the Oshawa Generals offense, which I think is fair. Sarah Noel, of course, Generals drafted. He's powerful as well. But I think, you know, you do have to give credit where it's due. And Kyle Kaiser has been Oshawa's MVP this season. And I think in the playoffs, that will stand out as well.
You mentioned how people, you know, the natural, the next time you make a run after a championship, people always kind of compare, well, how does this team stack up to that championship team? That championship team in 2015, you know, I remember a lot of Gens fans almost being salty that Connor McDavid had won the league or the playoff MVP. And then I believe it was the defenseman from Kelowna who had won the MVP at the Memorial Cup. No Oshawa player won an MVP award that year, but because that Gens team was so balanced top to bottom, there wasn't that one guy who stood out. I mean, obviously a player like Ken Appleby will get a lot of love because he's on the ice constantly, and in hindsight people will say, you know, Anthony Cirelli, but really at the time he was an unknown. He was one of the lower players on the team. So you take a look at that team, and they were just stacked top to bottom. This team kind of reminds me of that. You know, obviously I don't see them as much as you do on a nightly basis, but and there doesn't seem to be that huge drop-off in points. It seems like so many guys are contributing offensively. And, yeah, you do have that outstanding goalie in Kyle Kaiser, but it's not like some of the other teams around the league where, okay, we have to rely on this top line, and if they're having an off night, we're screwed. This just seems like top to bottom a pretty solid hockey club.
Yeah, it is interesting. Hey, how you, when you have a recent championship, you definitely do start comparing it. I think that there are some things that are similar and that are probably always similar for the Oshawa Generals. And I know that prior to that season, 2014-15, they knew they were going to be good, and they didn't get as much attention as they thought they deserved. I don't know if it's the same thing this season, because they did, you know, they got some mentions on the CHL top 10, and so they've kind of been on the radar. And it's been hard to ignore their success in the past couple of months. But yeah, I think there are some similarities in the sense that the team, while, you know, they will enjoy scoring goals on the rush a little bit, they are a team that does like to possess in the zone and wear you down that way. I don't know if they have the same size necessarily, or they may have the same size, you know, as far as the roster goes, but they may not be wielding it in the same way. So I'll give you an example. So Michael McCarron,
yeah,
who at the time was a Canadiens prospect, so he was the Generals' number one center, and he would, I mean, he was just so physical and hard to move off the puck, and, you know, he was one of the reasons why the Generals would retain possession for long parts of games and really wear down other groups, especially if they had smaller players. So to give you a, now he's not the same age, but Sarah Noel, who's 6'5", and he's not quite as heavy a player as McCarron was, for instance. So while he might be the same height and maybe even close in weight, he doesn't wield his size in the same way. Now, they're completely different players, so it's not really a fair comparison necessarily. But I think if you did look down the roster and you thought, oh, there's some size, they like to cycle, they've got a good goaltender, there are some similarities. I don't think that's necessarily the case as far as how the play manifests on the ice and what the Generals actually like to do. So in the case of Sarah Noel, he's a guy actually who really, when he gets, as I say, the trolley in the tracks, he gets going and he's hard to move, and he likes to work and score in transition. That's probably when he's best, to be honest, is when he's full speed skating into the zone. So, you know, there are some things that are different. There are some things that are the same, but what has not changed really, I think, is that Oshawa always feels like it's overlooked. And whether or not that's true, it doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, they had a lot of national games this year on the CHL Saturday Showcase. Like, you know, they were featured a lot. But I think there is always a thought in the room that I honestly think expands to the city itself, where, you know, it's a chip on your shoulder, it's a hard working place. And I think the players really resonate with that style, and it helps them perform on the ice, whether or not it's actually true in reality.
Of course, also, too, the news coming down this season with the GM plant closing. Of course, that's what the Oshawa Generals are named after. It's almost that identity crisis now. There was even people at the, not that, you know, I'm sure when anyone takes 2 minutes to really think about it, it's not a real possibility of it happening. But there are people even asking, what, does this team even change its name now? Because it's the Generals, right? But this is a town that, you know, when they won the Memorial Cup in 2015, the whole city got behind it. It's kind of like when Windsor won it back in 2009 after the, you know, the auto sector kind of had a downturn and a lot of people lost jobs down there. You know, the people of the city need something to cheer for, and the Generals couldn't have picked a better time to have a pretty good season, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you can definitely feel that, and it's really unfortunate for people who live in this city and, you know, are potentially going to go through some tough economic times, you know, making ends meet, their jobs. I mean, that's when hockey, you know, you can really put it aside and you look at the real life impacts of, you know, the economy and jobs that are available in a community. And if some of those jobs leave for whatever reason, you know, it's hard. And I think that it's important for an OHL hockey team in particular to be a part of the community, whether it's player visits or the actual team on the ice winning and giving people something to look forward to on a Friday night or a Saturday night or a Sunday night, and something to cheer about, something to feel pride about, because there's a lot of identity in this town for that industry in particular, for automotive manufacturing in particular, and there's a lot of pride in being hardworking people. And so you do lose a little bit of that when jobs go away, and so one way to regain that, and of course it doesn't pay the bills, but, you know, one way to regain some civic pride and some sense of community, and even just a distraction, you know, like, I mean, that part of the reason why I do this is because I want you to turn on your radio or your television or wherever you'll hear my voice on a Friday night and just, like, forget about what's going on in your world. And you know, you can't ignore your problems. You have to face them head on. But, you know, sometimes sport for all of us is a good thing. It's just feel a sense of community and also just not think about everything else for a couple of hours, you know, on a Sunday evening, watch a hockey game. So I think that's an important part, and I think the Generals have taken that head on as well, and they've recognized that, you know, people may struggle financially over the next handful of years, and hopefully there's other opportunities for those people eventually. But, you know, the hockey team's a part of it, and being able to come to the rink is a part of it, and that's not lost on the organization, not lost on me either.
Yeah, pretty much the whole point of this podcast is so people can think about something else other than their lousy jobs or whatever problems they're having in their life. Let's talk about some hockey for a bit and have some fun. And, man, this playoff looks like it's going to be pretty fun coming up here. The Ottawa 67s have long since clinched first place in the Eastern Conference and are kind of on coast mode. But, man, coming in even into this final weekend of the regular season, the second through third is second through fourth, I should say, really murky in the Eastern Conference. Niagara, 89 points, Sudbury, 87, and Oshawa, 86. Now, Oshawa can't finish second just due to the division alignment, as we all know. But, you know, Sudbury or Niagara could finish second or third, and then whoever loses out on that battle could definitely lose third place to the Oshawa Generals. And of course, a huge matchup coming up Sunday night. You know, I know a lot of teams when they kind of get locked into their position and there's still a game to go, you know, you end up resting a lot of guys on that final game. You play a backup goaltender. You might, you know, bring up some of the junior B call-ups for that game. Oshawa and Sudbury are going to be the final game in the entire OHL regular season on Sunday night, and that's got some pretty big playoff implications to it.
Oh, it absolutely does, and I think that the reason for that is how long essentially can you avoid the Ottawa 67s in the playoffs? I mean, that's what it comes down to for both Sudbury and Oshawa. So, you know, and I don't imagine we're going to get any surprises in the first round of the playoffs. So if you imagine that Ottawa, Niagara, Sudbury, and Oshawa come through that first round, then if you're in the fourth place, if you're the fourth place team, you're the low seed, you're playing Ottawa in the second round. And you may not come out of that. They're a great team. Maybe you get a better chance playing them in the conference finals if you can get into that third spot ahead of Sudbury, or if you're Sudbury ahead of Oshawa, and then you end up in theory playing Niagara, or maybe it gets flipped, of course, if Sudbury ends up ahead of Niagara in second. So you don't have to look at the standings for more than 10 seconds to realize that that's what you want if you're Sudbury, Niagara, or Oshawa. Is to end up as high as possible and avoid the Ottawa 67s in round two. And, yeah, that's your best shot. I mean, we know Ottawa is great. I mean, the points differential, I was told, between the Generals first, second, third, and fourth lines versus Ottawa, there's an astronomical difference in some cases. And we saw that, of course, the Generals saw that against Ottawa this weekend and just getting, you know, beating them once, but then getting pretty cleanly beaten the second time. And that's been a trend. I mean, they are a powerful team and they're pretty darn good and they're hard to beat. So I think the best chance for any group, and I think that's all the Eastern Conference teams and the way they're thinking, is the best chance for us to maybe make a go of it is how long can we delay playing them so that, you know, the battle of attrition in the playoffs ends up being a factor, and maybe they have a couple injuries and maybe we can get past them there in seven games with some bounces here or there, because they're pretty powerful. I know there's a lot of talk about Niagara, at least there was coming out of the trade deadline, but I think that the Ottawa 67s are far and away the best team in the conference, and you're going to need some things to go your way for any of these groups, Niagara, Sudbury, or Oshawa, to beat them.
Before we get to that game on Sunday night, you know, Oshawa, you know, you don't want to disparage any team in the league, but I would say that they get kind of an easier schedule than Sudbury this weekend with the home and home against the Kingston Frontenacs. And I think many of us would assume that Oshawa should be able to get 4 points out of those two games pretty easily. And that sets themselves up pretty good with a head to head against Sudbury on Sunday night, especially if Sudbury falters at any point this weekend in their two previous games where they'll be playing against the Hamilton Bulldogs and the Peterborough Petes. And moving forward here, you know, you talked about, I think we already kind of covered that first round where you mentioned that you don't think any upsets are going to happen in that first round. Now, it could all depend on the seeding and who wins that Central Division and who finishes third and fourth, but going to the playoffs, you know, you mentioned that you think Ottawa is the best team in the Eastern Conference. Do you foresee that is that who comes out of the Eastern Conference, or do you think Sudbury has a chance at surprising, or can the Oshawa Generals get to the OHL final once again?
Well, I mean, honestly, like, the regular season in the Ontario Hockey League, for me anyway, has, you know, I feel like it gives you 2/3 of your information for the most part. But the playoffs are the playoffs. And the thing is about junior hockey teams, and that's why we love it so much, is because it is a collection of sometimes teenagers, right? So it is a collection of, you know, if you're a competitive team, say 17 to 21-year-olds. So they're still learning a lot about the game, and they're still more unpredictable than you would say, compare them to, you know, an American Hockey League team or an NHL team, where these guys are professionals, they're adults, they're at the height of their game. So there's more variability in the performance of players at that age. So, you know, it's hard to make a hard prediction on one team or another, but I will say, from what I've seen from the Ottawa 67s and what they're capable of doing, particularly on the front end, like all the way down to their fourth liners. For instance, Graham Clark, I believe Graham Clark just had a highlight reel goal here with the lacrosse situation, you know, and he's playing some nights on their fourth line, right? And that kind of talent and that ability is on their fourth line. So they're a threat across the board. So without getting into the nitty gritty of their lineup, it would be hard for me to not see them in the Eastern Conference final at the very least. I think that if Niagara can figure out the weapons that they have offensively, then they've got a chance. But people have been pointing a lot to Sudbury and to Oshawa for being two plucky teams, a lot of weapons, some playoff experience, and two netminders for Sudbury and Ukko Pekka Luukkonen, and for the Oshawa Generals and Kyle Kaiser, who could, at the very least, steal you a game or two in a series, which would make them a threat as well. But again, you just get to... punctuation mark for the Ottawa 67s, I think, is their goaltending duo of Michael DiPietro and Cedric Andre.
Yeah.
Because even without DiPietro, I mean, first of all, without losing my point here, he is the punctuation mark. He is, you know, you go down that lineup and you look at how threatening they are offensively, and they've got some pretty good pieces defensively, and then you're like, oh, right, and they also have a former OHL goaltender of the year.
Yeah.
Right?
Memorial Cup champion.
Okay, so like... Yeah, so, yeah, and with some NHL experience now, albeit brief. But, like, you know, you get to that point and you realize, okay, so even if we can neutralize, I mean, like the Generals did, they neutralized the Felber line and the Rossi line. I mean, you could call one or the other, but Felber and Rossi playing together with, you know, sub in whichever winger you want, whether it's Kyle Maximovich, you know, go down that lineup. But the Rossi / Felber line, even if you can neutralize those guys like the Generals did over the weekend, you still have to beat Michael DiPietro, and you still have to create chances and beat him. So, you know, I think it's tough to imagine that anyone can get past that group. But again, variability of performance in the playoffs, especially in the OHL, is one of the reasons why we love it. And so, you know, of course, anything is possible. I just don't think anything is possible until, at the very least, the conference final.
There you go. And it's amazing to think what the goaltending is in that Eastern Conference as well. When you're talking about who, and this is not to disparage him by any means, but when you're talking like among the four top teams, probably, you know, the fourth best goalie is Stephen Dillon, who's an amazing goalie in his own right.
Yeah.
That's some tough competition.
Yeah, it totally is, actually. Yeah, I was just thinking that as I was talking about Niagara's ability up front, and then you think about, well, who's their net minor? Oh yeah, Stephen Dillon. Like, I guess he's all right. You know, he's not got world junior caliber. You know, literally each of those net minors. I mean, Kyle Kaiser wasn't the bona fide starter for the Americans, but I mean, they all have that high level of junior tournament on their resume from this season. And then you look at Stephen Dillon, and you're like, well, gosh, he's really good. But I mean, he doesn't. You know, he is fourth out of all those net miners.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll wonder if he takes that. I mean, he knows that, right? He's been playing in the league. He knows these guys. I wonder if he takes that as some motivation heading into the playoffs. But he will very quietly stone you throughout a game.
Yeah.
And he gets overshadowed probably because Niagara has some flashy forwards, and they have guys who will do things that are, you know, a lot of fun to watch, and their offense will take over the game. But I think, yeah, he could definitely be a factor. He probably just doesn't necessarily have the same wow factor as those other netminders do. But yeah, he's, I mean, look, on his best night, he's as good as any of them.
Definitely. You know, wanted to briefly touch on the Western Conference. You know, you're very familiar with this league now. The same kind of thing going on in the West. You've got four teams, and maybe you don't really, like Ottawa has pulled away, you really don't have that one that has pulled away out of the pack. You've got four teams that could conceivably all beat each other, with London, Saginaw, Sioux, and Guelph. And you know, I personally don't think anyone's coming out of the bottom four in the West, and I'd assume you might think that as well. But what are your thoughts, very briefly, on the Western Conference, and who would you think is the team to beat over there?
So what I do typically when I, you know, when I think about the Western Conference is, I look at the teams the Oshawa Generals have seen recently, because I think it's really important to measure a team probably post trade deadline, but even like into the month of February,
yeah,
when they've figured out, you know, what their group is capable of and, you know, come together. Like in the case of the Generals, when you're talking about those eight transactions, so they got players out, players in, takes them a couple of weeks to figure it out. And it did. So the teams the Generals have seen recently, two in particular that are very memorable. One is Saginaw. And I think that the Saginaw Spirit, so the Generals played them twice, post trade deadline. I think Saginaw has got a lot to offer, and, you know, that's available in the numbers. They're 95 points and second in the conference. But I also think Sault Ste. Marie. Now, Morgan Frost is going to be a big question mark for them because, you know, he's been suspended indefinitely. So that's a big issue for them for sure. But I think Sault Ste. Marie, the Generals have seen them recently, and that's a team that, you know, they possess the puck so well. And that's their thing. They just, they have it, and their system works so well. They've got Mac Hollowell on the blue line who can score and move the puck around. He's just an unbelievably talented player. So I think Saginaw and Sault Ste. Marie being the two teams that I've seen play recently, you know, are threatening, and they definitely have something to offer. It's been a while since we've seen London, and they're obviously leading the conference, and I'm sure they're excellent for many reasons. It's just hard for me to give an opinion on having not seen them, you know, play a lot of games in the last little while. But, you know, it is that puck possession thing. And that term gets thrown on a lot. But when you talk about the Western Conference, particularly Sault Ste. Marie and in the playoffs, it's exhausting to play a team like that when they always have the puck. And it's hard for you to generate anything, start rolling your lines. You're just trying to force turnovers the whole time. That's not what hockey teams are designed to do, right? It's like a German car, right? Like a BMW, it's designed to drive at 140 kilometers on the Autobahn, right? Mm-hmm. It's what it's built for. You start driving it around in the city, it gets clunky, it kind of gets messed up. So and a hockey team is the same way in some ways, and especially the way that they're coached now. You're designed to possess the puck and flow. And if you can't do that because the other team is doing a really good job of possessing the puck and keeping it, then it really sends you swerving around. So it's really difficult for you to create any type of momentum in the game. And Sault Ste. Marie really forces that upon you. Saginaw to some degree, but Sault Ste. Marie is, you know, really forces that type of situation upon you where you're just trying to force turnovers and when you can't, they're tough to beat.
Definitely a team that's done a lot better than many people thought they would this year too. And really of all the contenders of the eight true contenders that there really are in the OHL this year, they're probably the team that did the least amount in tinkering with their roster. They really did nothing at the deadline this year. So it's interesting to see what they can do in that Western Conference. Callum, you know, one more thing I wanted to get to quickly here as we continue on is the broadcasting situation, Oshawa. Of course, as I mentioned, you know, you are the quote unquote radio play-by-play man, but it's not really radio in Oshawa, is it? It's you're with the OshawaJournals.com. You guys have more of a streaming service, and that's kind of more different to see with those teams. You know, Oshawa, of course, is one of those historic OHL teams that you put up there with the Peets and the Greyhounds and the Knights and the Rangers, who've been around for decades and have a very well dedicated fan base. And those are the teams that you usually see are general staples on the radio and have radio broadcasts that have lasted a long time. There have been stretches in recent years in Oshawa where there was no audio broadcast of the game, or they've had to kind of resort to the web. Just based on your time there, why is the situation the way it is in Oshawa with being on online and not radio? And honestly, why is that not a problem these days? Because, you know, even though radio is free and it's easy to get to in car, really, internet is the way to go these days.
Yeah, it does certainly seem that way, especially since a lot of AHL broadcasts, for instance, are going to that streaming format where they own the broadcast and they can provide the equipment and put it on the air. And it's beautiful because we all have smartphones now, so we don't necessarily need to just be in our cars listening to the game. You can, as long as you have your device, you can just tap into the app and listening. And that's the format that we've gone with in Oshawa. And the story behind that is in 2015, when that small media group, they decided not to continue broadcasting the games. They were streaming as well, but they decided not to continue. And so I took it upon myself to create the broadcast essentially for the Generals, where, you know, we looked around for a streaming service, and we use MixLR, which basically creates our stream, allows us to broadcast the games. And the equipment is very simple, right? It's a radio board, it's some headsets, and it's a computer. That's all you need. And you need a pretty dependable internet connection, and now that's available in all buildings. And so we can create a really clear stream of the games for, you know, a fairly reasonable amount of expenditure, and it's just my time and you know, a little bit of production around that. But, you know, it's pretty straightforward. And I remember bringing it up with a few people in the industry, in the radio industry, like, hey, I think we might just run a stream ourselves. And, you know, the standard format or the traditional format is to you create the broadcast, you send it back to the station, and then the station puts it over the air through terrestrial radio. But that's not necessarily the case anymore. I mean, you run a podcast, so you know this, you can create content, you can share it thanks to the internet. And for us with a live event, it's the same thing, as we can create listen points in a bunch of different apps and the website. And we've been able to grow our listenership really healthily over the last 4 years of doing this, because it's available and people know, obviously you just need a smartphone or a computer and you can listen to it very easily and it's a good quality. And so, yeah, that's been the way that we've gone. Now, at the same time, would it be great to also be on a terrestrial radio station? Yeah, for sure. It'd be great to be there because I think that's where a lot of hockey fans are used to listening to games. But at the same time, you know, every hockey fan who's aware of whatever it is, whatever radio station that holds the broadcast for their favorite team, I mean, they know that when they get out of their car or when they're not around a radio, they know they'll just go to the radio station's app and continue listening. So that's been a great thing for us because that consumer behavior, that fan behavior has really helped us out because people know how to get to our broadcast.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, the benefit of being on terrestrial radio still. I mean, I find in the OHL, you look at a crowd in any building, and two big sections of the crowd are, of course, the young kids who are there because, you know, their hockey team got tickets or giveaway groups, what have you. Lots of young children. And then there's also at the other end of the spectrum, lots of old age folks in the arena who've been going to games for decades. I'm talking about those people at the Tribute Community Center who were there at the old Civic Auditorium back in, you know, when it was built in the 1960s, watching Bobby Orr play. I mean, you know, and a lot of those baby boomer generation people, you know, they're not, probably not as many of them listening to the online stream. They like their old handy radio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's not lost on us either. I mean, we know that in conventional radio, we know where our demographics are, and we know what it takes for them to listen to the broadcast. So you're right. I mean, as far as terrestrial radio or traditional radio station goes, it would be great to be there because that's where people know how to find you. I think that's changing a little bit. I mean, my parents are in their 60s and 70s, and they listen no problem. I mean, my dad is notorious for sending me text during the game with emojis and all that stuff. You know, he chirps me on air, and my mom likes to do it as well. They've found it. So, you know, it is possible, but you're right. I mean, it does take, you know, typically everybody's done this with, if you have older parents or grandparents, you've shown them how to use something on their device and get access to it. So, you know, it would be probably good to be on a traditional radio station still for that reason. Hockey fans who are older, you know, will find you, but it will probably shift. I mean, to be honest, in the next 5 to 10 years to being primarily a streaming or online service. And so I think we feel really good and well positioned in that regard to have already had 4 or 5 years behind us, optimized the broadcast in a number of ways to make sure that, you know, we have great intermission content. It sounds really good. We place the mics really well. The board itself, my microphone, all of that stuff is optimized to make sure that it's a clean, clear broadcast. We don't have any drops in service. We don't have any, there's no issue with it. So all the same service levels and all the same quality levels that you find in a regular traditional broadcast, we can provide and maybe even exceed at some point. So we feel really well positioned for, you know, whenever the shift comes, if it hasn't happened already, where people are really just opening up their phone and listening to content that way.
Callum, thank you so much, not only for taking the time, but of course telling your story and giving us your great insight on not just the Oshawa Generals, but the OHL itself. And as we talked about, a little bit of a radio and audio medium as well. We thank you so much for being on the show this week.
Yeah, you're welcome, Stephen. And thank you for putting this podcast together, because I think it's really cool for people like myself who have a great passion for junior hockey and the game of hockey in general. It's really cool to see yourself putting this together and making it go.
Well, Callum, we thank you for being a part of it this week as well. That's Callum Ng from the Oshawa Generals, and he's the play-by-play announcer for the Jennies. When we come back, we wrap up this week's episode of the OHL Fanboys Podcast.
Chop you down like the cherry tree, Ranch.
Take your chances on the PK.
Kirk with a shot, he scores!
Die coordination by Liam Kirk, the Arizona Coyotes prospect. Long shot, puck is loose in front. Kirk with his second power play goal. Pass on the far side for Dare Arguchinsev. Kirk scores! Hat trick.
Welcome back to the OHL Fanboys Podcast as we wrap up the final episode of the regular season. Or is that next weekend? I'm not sure. Final episode before the end of the regular season. Really like to thank once again Callum Ng from the Oshawa Generals, their play-by-play announcer, for coming on and giving us some great insight to the OHL. You can follow him on Twitter at Callum Ng. Now, Callum, spelled C-A-L-L-U-M, and Ng is just spelled N-G. It's, you know, it's kind of like adding the I in afterwards as far as the phonetic sounding of it goes. Of course, lots of, you know, important games this weekend as we come into the final stretch here of just about 3 games left for most teams. A couple teams have 4? No, everyone has 3 or less as of right now. So big games, of course, tonight, first of all, the London Knights are in Guelph. For a game that should be a pretty good matchup. As a matter of fact, London finishes with 3 road games this weekend against the 3 top teams in the West other than themselves. They're in Guelph tonight, they're in the Sioux Friday, and they're in Saginaw on Saturday. So a big weekend for the London Knights as they try and wrap up first in the Western Conference. Another game tonight of importance, the Barrie Colts are going to be in Owen Sound. If Barrie does not win this game tonight, they will be eliminated from playoff contention, and North Bay will clinch that last playoff spot. So we'll see what happens there. Some other big games this weekend. Of course, the West Division title will be on the line. Saginaw and the Sioux have a home and home on Thursday and Sunday. So Thursday in Saginaw, Sunday in the Sioux. As I mentioned in the interview, of course, Sudbury is going to be in Oshawa for the final game of anyone's regular season. That's going to be Sunday evening after everyone else is wrapped up. So some playoff implications on the line there. So lots of stuff. Of course, I mentioned the Erie Otters. They're fighting for that last playoff spot. They got a home-and-home with the Storm this weekend. Lots of big games on tap as we come into the end of the 2018-19 regular season. Of course, you can find the OHL Fanboys Podcast on Spotify and iTunes for all you Android and Apple listeners. And, of course, we're on Twitter at OHL Fanboys. You can follow us on Twitter. Also, Brian Thompson is at Toast84, and I am at CMcLean888. For Brian Thompson, I am Steve McLean. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with our playoff preview show on the OHL Fanboys Podcast. So long, everybody.
You've been listening to the OHL Fanboys Podcast.